It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And we are off and running for this final day of the month of January 2019. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us online. That's where you go for the easiest access to the stream. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, unless, you know, Frontier has somehow managed to screw things up. The stream goes, either the live program or the previous evening's program, depending on, you know, when you're tuned in. Clocks, planet, time, that stuff. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid.
And I'm Agnes Kincaid, and it's Bob's birthday. And Bob will be right back to the mic in just a second. See, I scooch him out of the seat. It works well.
Well, it was almost... Daggummit, Agnes, it was almost birthday naked radio.
Close, but I dress you well.
It's still a mite brisk back here in the studio. It's, it's not as bad as it could be. You know, listen, there's no sympathy for us whatsoever anywhere, north of here. But it did get down below zero last night. And
I have sympathy for
Agnes
Chicago.
Agnes has been... burning propane for all she's worth all day today, and
insulating,
and she's gotten it up to all of 62 magnificent degrees here in the fabulous Horn Studios.
It's balmy
at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. Pardon me, for some reason, sometimes maybe it's Frontier, maybe it's Maybelline, I don't know. But I have a hard time getting into the chat room. Am I there? Let's type howdy and find out. If you'd like, the chat room is there for you during the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 p.m. Changing out propane tanks here right now. 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. There's a great deal of merriment that takes place in there. If you go to HeadOn.live and you click the chat room tab or button or whatever it is, you will be immediately offered the opportunity to set up a screen name and a password, and then you can jump in and be immediately welcomed to the wacky, zany, merry, multimedia, real-time extravaganza that is the Horn Chat Room. By the likes of Anatole and Malin up in New Jersey, and Squeaky and BT Blom and Warrior Witch and more who may yet wander by. Brother Deacon Asa is even in there right now doing some al fresco moderating, as is pinch hit midweek utility chat room moderator and all around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. Did I do the hi, I'm Bob Kincaid part? Well, I mean.
Yes, you did. Okay. Then I broke in and then.
Well,
it's
you
mess,
know, just
right?
messes with your train of thought there after,
It's your birthday, honey. Dementia is not setting in yet.
Quit that. But it's also Thorn in the Side Thursday. And it's our final evening of fundraising free radio. for the month of January. Thank you to everybody who made that possible. And let me see here. We'll get to any number of thorns here in fairly short order. Let's see. Hold it. Just honestly, I hate to use that phrase, but in all candor, it was a little bit of a late start because I have resisted being back here for as long as possible because it is, as we say here in the hills and hollers of almost level west by cold Trump, Virginia-stan, colder than a well digger's ass. And so I'm taking care of some of the things that ordinarily get taken care of. A few minutes before the program starts. Let's see. Now, why is this not letting me in? And that. And then we click. Well, I was going to, never mind, let's see. Why is this not working? Well, for some reason or another, it doesn't want to cooperate, and that really sucks. That's something. Well, we'll have to do that on another evening. Thank you, dear. Adding another layer of clothing back here. Because as nice as a 61-degree room can be in, say, mid-July, it's not so much fun on a, 20-degree day. We'll get there. We'll get there.
The snowman's marbles rolled away, so, you know.
Yeah, they froze right off. Yep. Mm-hmm. All right, enough shilly-shallying about. Thank you very kindly, Brother Deacon Asa. Hot on both feeds. Hope you're having a great birthday so far. A couple of hits of the good reverend are in order, perhaps.
Yeah, tell him I love him.
Something, maybe, kinda, sorta. That's very true. Lee in New York pointing out, howdy, Bob, cold weather is an excuse for you and Agnes to stay real close. Enjoy. Yeah. You may rest assured we have been. Didn't sleep real well last night because we had the propane going in the bedroom, too. And there's just something about going to sleep with that deadly stuff going, not far from your head that gives me a little case of the creeps. You don't want to, carbon monoxide and stuff. You don't want to wake up all dead and stuff. So that's part of it. Now, where to begin? Where to begin? Let me check the emails. Is there what's that? Yeah, I did too do the date part. I said it was the 31st of January, Randy. You must have gotten here late. Thank you, thank you, Darlene in Connecticut. Happy birthday, Bob. And Agnes, Darlene was tickled to hear from Agnes. Wait, what? You and Agnes are not sleeping too well? Oh, the comment that advice, though reality is likely less fun in such temps. That from Marty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not quite like the old joke that begins, it's a damn lie, didn't nobody sleep at all. No, it ain't like that. Why don't I just stop now while I'm behind? Quit while I'm behind. Cut my losses. Okay, let's just, let's get down to business, of course. Friday on the front porch, tomorrow. Where to begin? Where to begin this evening? I spend the day reviewing the news. And you know as well as I do that sometimes you just can't you can't take too much more. It's Trump fatigue. And I despise simply because there is so much ignorance to challenge in it. I despise the abortion so-called debate, because it's not a debate. It's one side demanding and insisting upon constitutional rights, and the other side, for reasons that are thinly veiled religious mummery, pretending that somehow they've got a principled argument against. The bottom line is that nobody has ever made an argument against a woman's right to control the workings of her own body that did not first and foremost rely upon some religious argument. In other words, there is not a single person who has ever argued against a woman's right to choose who has not at the very selfsame time argued against the First Amendment itself. You might recall, and I know you do, that the First Amendment guarantees that the government will not establish a religion, a national religion. Right? Sure. Well, when these Baptists and Methodists and Presbyterians and Lutherans and Pentecostals and Apostolics and floor rollers and strychnine swiggers and incense swinging Roman Catholics argue against a woman's right to choose, they neglect the fact that not everybody in this country adheres to their twisted view of their religion. And so, in fact, they are trying to impose their religious beliefs about the role of women in society onto people who don't necessarily buy into that religious claptrap. And the business over the recent bills in New York and Virginia is, of course, driving the anti-abortion industry, and it is an industry. It is a multi-billion-dollar-a-year industry that manages to glom onto our public commons and steal from the common good of all of us by making the monies pumped into this multi-billion-dollar industry tax-exempt, while at the same time they are overtly political. Well, it's a fraud, and it is a wholesale attempt to proselytize religion via assaults on the agency and self-determination of every woman in the United States. No, it is not prayer meeting Wednesday, but nonetheless, we have here for our enjoyment, if you can call it that, pastor, brother, former governor, former presidential candidate, diabetes snake oil cure salesman, and father of White House Press Secretary Jethreen Bodine, Mike Huckstebe, who, of course, was called over to Fox News TV Radio Rwanda because the check is still clearing, to explain science, the science of being a woman with a reproductive system, and only he knows it, and the heathen women people, they're just a bunch of Jezebels.
Restrictions on abortion. Governor Huckabee, where are we going?
To hell in a handbasket is where we're going. This is uncivilized. It's uncivilized behavior to have a fully developed baby, and we take the baby's life at the point of birth.
Which is not what happens. What the new and see, the reason that states like New York have to pass these laws is because literally any day now, Brett Kavanaugh, who likes beer, and Ann's boy Neil, and Clarence Pubes on the Coke can Slappy Thomas, and Sammy Bad Breath Alito, and Dead-Eyed John Roberts can gut, and may very well gut, and effectively eliminate the constitutional rights protected by Roe versus Wade. I don't think we've ever been this close before. We are that close. Because, among other things, the Supreme Court has agreed to hear a case coming out of one state that they already overruled the exact same thing in another state, only back when a so-called moderate swing vote and daddy to Trump's banker, Tony Kennedy, was still on the court. Well, he's gone, and the concept of stare decisis means less than nothing to this bunch of judicial thugs who occupy the Supreme Court. But every one of these religious maniacs who inveigh against a woman's right to choose always goes for the gore. They wave the bloody fetus. It used to be called waving the bloody shirt. Now, that you know, they literally show up at protests with pictures of fetuses. And when they're done at the protest, they go home and they set them up and look at them and proceed to masturbate furiously because, well, that's how evangelicals roll. Jesus, they're disgusting. But Mike Huckstebe is apparently a member of what we that crowd who believes that women go and pour a glass of Chardonnay and maybe get a little brie and some snack crackers and sit back and kick their ankles up into the stirrups and, you know, have a recreational abortion. Mm-hmm. It should come as no surprise whatsoever that pastor, brother, minister, reverend, former governor, former presidential candidate, diabetes, snake oil, cure salesman, Mike Huckstebe, doesn't have an iota of truth in him. There are, as I've pointed out for I think the last three nights now, legitimate medical reasons why abortions have to be performed and have to be legal to be performed up to the very last moment. It is, in fact, the last day of January 2019. And although it was a very long time ago now, and it was before we met and before we married, my beloved wife went through a hell on earth pregnancy. And she doesn't mind me telling this story. She was carrying twins, twin boys. And neither of them were developing right. But the male obstetrician that she had supplanted his religious judgment for her constitutional right and compelled her to carry her pregnancy, even though one of the twins died because the other twin siphoned all the life out of him. Sort of like a Romulus and Remus thing right there in the womb. And by the time it became necessary to do an emergency C-section, well, the twin that had siphoned all the life away was malformed to the point of never being able to live anything remotely resembling a human life or having a human lifespan. Didn't have much in the way of a head, next to nothing in the way of a brain. The autonomic nervous system was never going to work. You know, the stuff that keeps you from having to sit around and think about, okay, time to breathe, time to exhale, time to breathe again. The autonomic nervous system. No, wasn't there. The twin that died was perfectly formed. These things happen because at the bottom line is that we are we're animals, not machines, and everything does not run according to some sort of computer program routine or subroutine. My wife had horrible medical problems that followed in the wake of what that butcher of a doctor did to her. And for years and years and years, every time the anniversary of that event rolls around, even if nobody's paying attention, even her, all of a sudden she'll look at me and say, hey, what's the date? And I'll say, and she'll say, ah, that's why I feel like hell. There is not a woman alive who gets pregnant but doesn't know that possibility exists. And apparently there's not an evangelical, pasty-faced, doughy, millionaire, goddamn grifter preacher alive who doesn't want to supplant his medieval religious judgment, his Bronze Age religious judgment, for the absolutely necessary conversation that takes place between a pregnant woman and her doctor when things go horribly, horribly wrong. So, yeah, Huxterby says we're going to hell because New York has a law that says we're not going to... What that law basically does is utterly refute about 25 or 30 years of ignorant, old, cranky, pasty-faced, doughy white men who know about as much about reproductive science and reproductive medicine as, a hog does about setting the table for Sunday dinner. And shrieking about partial birth abortion. It doesn't even exist. It's not a medical term. Ron in Raleigh says, I remember back when John F. Kennedy was running for president how folks were having a conniption about a Catholic being president because he would be taking orders from the Pope. Now the Supreme Court is filthy with the Mary-worshipping mackerel snappers who are about to inflict their religious beliefs on the rest of us. This handbasket, says Ron, is picking up speed. Ron says, happy birthday, Bob. I'll join you in 4 days. Well, happy birthday, Ron. That would be February 4th, right? Ciphering. That's a cool thing about the end of the month. Right. So now that everybody, even without being warned, has reached out and grabbed their hockey puck, let's get back to Huckster. No, what's that? We're hearing from the Fraternity of Ron this evening. Off topic, but Ron in the far frozen north says, my nuts are frozen. I'm just quoting a big fox squirrel I overheard in my backyard today. Another 1 inch of the evil white crap fell today, taking us to about 41 inches for the month. 28 below Fahrenheit this morning with ice fog supplanted by light snow and then blowing snow, and I saw two kids slapping a puck back and forth in a parking lot on my way to work this morning. Canada. Yeah, I saw where the car wreck happened in, up somewhere in Quebec, and the Quebecois, realizing it might be a while before the wreck was cleared because there were several involved, just reached into their cars and pulled out their hockey sticks because I guess the Quebecois always keep hockey sticks in their car and a puck or two and proceeded to work up an impromptu alfresco game of Le Hockey while they were waiting for the wreckers to come and clear everything up. Oh, thank you, Trey, and Kentucky Stan. Kentucky Stan on the radar this evening for the kind wishes. Anyway, back to Huckstery.
This is not a political issue. This is not Democrat, Republican. It's not
bullshit.
Left or right, this is up and down.
No. This disgusting waste of flesh, blood, and God knows oxygen on the planet can't open his mouth without telling a lie.
We're either going to respect human life and believe that every person is equal, or we're...
He sure didn't have much respect for human life back when the human lives were being subjected to bread lines and soup kitchens and unemployment and bills mounting up and mortgages accruing more costs. He didn't have much respect for human life back when that was happening, because I didn't see any clips of Huckstery out there saying, in the name of Jesus Christ, reopen the government, Mr. President, and give up on this foolishness that you call a wall. Nope, didn't happen. But when Huckstery says human life, he means fetuses.
We're going to go back to the horrible days in history where some people were more equal than others, and we did not respect that every human life has intrinsic worth and value. And when we do that, we take ourselves on a road from which we cannot come back.
What the actual fuck is he even talking about? What time was that? I don't know. Maybe he'll tell us.
And I pray to God that this gets out of the realm of the political back and forth, and we look at it from a human rights perspective, an issue of personhood, not an issue of politics, but whether or not when 23 chromosomes from a male and 23 from a female come together and create a human life, do we believe that the personhood that's created in that moment matters? And do we protect and honor that human life? Are we to believe that we can choose some life to be more valuable than others? And God help us when we ever say, this person has value, this person doesn't.
Which is not being said at all. Now, there is a value judgment perhaps being made that there is value in not compelling a woman to give birth to a dead thing. And that business about every human life having value, I remember when this fucker supported the Iraq War, in which George W. Bush and Dick Cheney and Don Rumsfeld and that cadre of unindicted war criminals managed to slaughter a million non-combatant, innocent Iraqi civilians. I remember when that happened. And you know what? Mike Huckabee was nowhere to be found, because there's human life with value and then there's human life with, you know, real value. As Matt in San Francisco points out, every human life except for gay folk. Right, because, you know, what? You want the right not to be murdered or denied your rights because, or beaten the shit out of because of who you love and how you love? Oh no, we can't be affording that right, because the great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky from the Bronze Age, back when people were goddamn baffled by fucking wheelbarrows, well, he doesn't like that. See how it works.
This person we keep. This person is disposable and expendable. We no longer will be able to say, God bless America. We will only be able to say, God forgive America.
You know, which is something I've argued for a long time, that we should probably have been saying all along for those people who believe in the great big bearded juvenile delinquent from the Bronze Age in the sky. We got a lot more to be forgiven for right now than we have to be making demands on the deity for blessings. A little late to the party, Pastor Brother is. And as Irish Dave points out, wait just a gob-dang minute. So now the Catholic governor's being attacked for not following Rome's orders? I know, it gets confusing. By the way, this is another one of those dare to dream moments for 2020. Dare to dream that we can do a clean sweep of every Senate race in 2020. Send Chinless Mitch back to Kentucky. He's never going back to Kentucky. He wouldn't, not on a dare. Send John Cornhole into some lobbying job or whatnot. And finish the work. And by the way, along the way, expand the Supreme Court of the United States to about 13 members. And get them all confirmed. Make them all, have them all be about, 40 years old. So that the Republicans will be impotent in the Supreme Court for about the next 50 years. Is that worth putting aside our differences and our purity tests and recognizing that there are some things that we hold in common that are worth fighting for and are actually more important than the things that divide us? Huh? You think? Yeah, let's see. That would be something on the order of 66 votes if we could take all 20 of those Republican seats. That's kind of exciting, isn't it?
Here's what I don't understand. If I can ask everybody their opinion on this. If killing a pregnant woman is considered double homicide, double murder, then...
Which never should have been passed into law in the first place.
How do we look at this differently, I guess? That's just a question I have a hard time wrapping my head around.
You mean if it's two lives at
considered murder,
yes,
then?
Yes, it's an interesting question.
No, it's not. It's an ignorant question. It's a question born of lack of knowledge and the fact that a woman was hired to say that. Of course, Honey Blonde here will never have a problem dealing with a difficult pregnancy because, of course, she lives in New York and has access to health care in New York and couldn't care less if a poor woman of color in, say, Mississippi Stan is deprived of her constitutional rights because, well, Honey Blonde here, I don't know what her name is. That's the only reason I refer to her that way. She's protected. She is immune to the kinds of decisions that a tyrannical theocrat wannabe like Mike Huckabee would subject the people of this country to.
And I know, you know, tis my...
Okay, here comes the token liberal, who is already fumbling out of the gate because she doesn't even know how to talk about this issue to this evangelical goddamn mullah sitting to her immediate right.
My fate in life on the couch to be the one to defend Governor Northam's comments and the bills in New York and Rhode Island, which I think... do a lot of good in protecting a woman's right to control her own body and what the Supreme Court intended with Roe v. Wade here. But the reason that it's different than...
Just once, I'd like to see somebody on our side turn to Mike Huckabee and say, you whited sepulcher, you loud praying Pharisee braying in the goddamn streets. Your own avatar says that you already have your reward and that his daddy doesn't want a fucking thing to do with you. But instead, we got people in the multimillionaire for-profit media who, since this was an issue earlier this week, have no Bible literacy. Not that I'm saying we need to be teaching in schools. We don't. I learned all of my Bible literacy between the four walls of my home and in Sunday school. Now, was it worth having that shit live in my head? Probably not, except for the fact that you need someone who can call this miserable theocrat out, this dictatorial asshole out. Emphasis on, you know.
You dick!
Murder is murder comes with malice, and these late-term abortions are occurring when the life of the mother or the life of the fetus is in danger. And Governor Northam's clarification made clear that the baby that he was discussing was not viable. We would have lived maximum a couple hours outside of the womb. So this isn't about leaving babies to die. And some little-known facts about what went on in New York, because I know there was big uproar here last week about it, is that our penal code actually works in such a way that a woman could be punished for having a late-term abortion. And we talked about that during the presidential election when then-candidate Trump stumbled into a whole big mess where he said that women should be punished, and even the Susan B. Anthony group said, no, that's not the case here.
Now, let's go back to an email from Steve in New York. Every human life has intrinsic value. The death penalty, really? The death penalty isn't evidence of this, Mr. Pro-Life. Killing a bunch of brown people in Iraq and Afghanistan isn't evidence of this. How about children in cages? What kind of intrinsic value do they have, Mike Huckabee? 3 million people who've lost their health care because of the gutting of the ACA. Every human life has intrinsic value? Here's a quote from the Deseret News. Today, Americans and decent people the world over cheer the news that madman, murderer, and terrorist Osama bin Laden is dead, said Huckabee, a Southern Baptist minister and a potential 2012 candidate for president. Yeah, it's not prayer meeting Wednesday. This happens to just be an issue that is made toxic entirely because of its adoption and its leverage by the religion industry. And make no mistake, they don't give a fuck about a fetus. They care about the money it brings in, because it brings in a lot of money. And they don't worship the great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky from the Bronze Age. They worship a different god referred to in their holy book as Mammon. Ron in Raleigh says, I don't remember. I never heard Reverend Huckabee rail against the death penalty if those lives are disposable. Isn't he a hypocritical piece of shit like most are pig lickings? Why, yes. How many of these fuckers have requested that their impregnated paramours have abortions? Well, we know for a fact that there's no small number of those. Kevin in Colorado Springs says, exactly, Bob. Besides the Iraq War, which was bad enough, you don't see the Hucksterbys advocating for the end of the slaughter of the babies and other human beings in Yemen now, do you? Well, they don't matter. Them babies was already going to hell anyway, because them babies was born Muslim. See how it works? Of course. Subject line, when people are not the same. Lee in New York says, yes, Bob, Mike Huckabee has one thing right. People will be treated differently. Pregnant rich women will be able to get an abortion. Pregnant poor women will be searching for a hanger. Spot on, Lee. Dave in Talibandiana says, Mike Huckabee is a goddamn bigot, and I damn all of his like to the non-existent hell in which he exists. Many years ago, some of these God-fearing assholes who don't fear everything but missing a meal called a friend of mine a murderer because she, too, had had an abortion, and he called her that to her face at one of these goddamn protests. Now, I'm a firm believer in the First Amendment. You can say anything you like, but when you cause harm with your speech, you should be held accountable. Just a thought from your buddy Dave, P.S., I still remember the look on her face as she gripped my arm and we walked through that crowd. Even as I dictate this into the phone. I suspect a lot of us have stories like that. And to the extent that men have stories, women have stories a million times worse. Plain and simple. And the liberal lady, well, I don't know, maybe Huckabee will shake some holy water at her or damn her to hell or something like that.
This is about women's reproductive health. It is about privacy. It is about ensuring that states are in step with what Roe v. Wade intended when we see rollbacks of women's protections in Ohio.
All right. I want to stop there before you.
There's nothing reproductive about the death of a baby.
But it's not the death of a baby, Governor.
Yes, it is.
That is not a viable fetus.
Viability.
Here comes Dr. Huckabee. You know, he's going to mansplain to the little women folk how science works.
In Ohio.
Right. I want to stop there before
nothing
you.
Reproductive you, about the death of a baby.
But it's not the death of a baby, health. Governor.
Yes, it is.
That is not a viable fetus.
Viability is interpretive. And
really? You know, because I thought viability meant is it going to live or is it not going to
live?
Well,
if it lives, it lives.
Viability is an interpretive. No, no. Viability is not an interpretive term within the medical literature, medical science, medical knowledge, medical community. The viability of the fetus means the ability of the fetus to live without the support of the host mother. Plain and simple. Mike Huckabee, I don't know. Maybe he'd like to be there in a delivery room as a dead baby is delivered vaginally. Maybe he'd have his dick in his hand and just be masturbating furiously away. Is it going to be viable? Oh, Jesus, I hate these fuckers.
If it doesn't, then let
the
God
doctors
be the
in Virginia, three medical professionals actually have to deem that you should have this procedure. And that's what that bill was trying to override because it was too onerous for you to have to go to three different people.
But I thought Democrats believed in science. Biologically, it is not a part of a woman's body. If it was, it would have the exact DNA of the woman. It would have the same blood type. It doesn't. It is a distinct unique human being from the moment
Bullshit.
Of
the one that can't live on its own.
But
that's why these abortions...
Actually, we're kind of talking about two ends of the spectrum here, and I want to make sure that we're apples and apples. So you guys are now talking about conception in the beginning.
What
these
I'm not.
Bills
I'm talking
are
about
talking about
term.
Go with what the governor of Virginia said, and that was this is at the beginning of life. Like
right.
The baby's already been delivered.
Yeah.
The baby
has
so
delivered,
but I want to...
See, I think her name is Harris. Her first name's Harris. What Harris did there is she saw Mike Huckabee getting his ass handed to him because he's about as much of a scientist as, you know, my cat's a broadcast engineer, which is to say not at all. And so she jumped in to try to save him. The bottom line is there are any number of medical conditions that cannot be diagnosed until after 20 weeks, and which upon diagnosis then trigger a need for a decision on the part of the mother, not on the part of a priest, not on the part of even a physician, certainly not on the part of a diabetes snake oil cure salesman, as to how long or if to carry that fetus, which incidentally is a part of the mother, because and that bullshit about, oh, it doesn't have the same DNA. The only way that it's able to live is through the nutrients in the blood supply that pass through the umbilicus and into the placenta and into the fetus. Otherwise, you can't tell, for instance, whether or not a baby's heart chambers have been adequately and appropriately formed. You can't tell at 20 weeks if the brain is going to be there the way that, well, a human being needs to have a brain. We're not talking about a cosmetic process. We're talking about something that's sad and heartrending, but also, in some senses, a relief, just the same way that we would take out a bad appendix or pull a wisdom tooth. Might hurt. Might make you feel like you'd been through hell. But if it's a matter of life or death, and the thing growing inside is not even human? I mean, what he mentioned the 23 chromosome pairs, and mommy gives one and daddy gives one, and you get 23 and 23 is 46. What happens when that ain't necessarily true? See, some of this stems from these sick bastards' inability to acknowledge the actual science, and especially to acknowledge the biological force of evolution. Evolution, and explaining this to a fundy is like trying to teach tap dancing to a centipede. But evolution is entirely neutral. And what I mean by that is evolution doesn't try to make positive changes. The mutations that take place as a result of evolution they're all a matter strictly of trial and error within a given environment. There's no evolutionary force out there that says, hey, let's make a baby have a third arm growing out of the top of its head. That might be good under some circumstance. No. Mutations simply happen, and if the mutations are successful, well, rule one is the baby has to live. It has to be able to survive. It can't do that with a piece of a brain or a chamber of a heart or a tenth of a lung or no intestines. all of which happen in the course of the development of a fetus. Now, these assholes will shriek, and they already are, social Darwinism. Well, Darwin never said anything about social Darwinism. It is a subsequent invention down the road. Note coming from Don, subject line engineers. Dear Bob, if your cats aren't broadcast engineers, then how come you keep blaming them for walking across your panel and upsetting your settings? Seems to me they might be engineers, just bad ones. Well, I would, if we're going to go down this semantic path, then I would argue that a bad engineer is no engineer at all. But more or less, the problem with my cats as engineers is that they have no real conception of what they're doing. And so, therefore, yeah, not broadcast engineers, just cats tap dancing on a bunch of pretty lights. Beep, boop, boop, pop, beep, boop, boop. And you come back in here and you go, hey, why, yeah. You've noticed the reverb doesn't work anymore, so that, you know, and we had so much fun with the reverb, but it doesn't go out to the stream anymore, because among other things, I accessed the internal workings of the board through the iPad that is now inconveniently fucking dead. So I'm trying to find a workaround on that. Jimmy out in the Great Northwest says, Mike Huckabutt says God talks to him. Does God ever tell him to shut the fuck up? No. You know what? The great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky from the Bronze Age has never told a single preacher to shut the fuck up, which is kind of surprising. I mean, what would you pay? You know what? We'd all be believers, wouldn't we? If a great big booming voice in the middle of this clip came down out of the clouds, reverb and everything, and said, Mitt. No, not Mitt. I was thinking of a different hypocrite. Sorry. Mike Huckabee, shut the fuck up! We'd all be believers. Not only would I be a believer, but if that voice came down and did that, and then a lightning bolt came down and turned Mike Huckabee into a goddamn greasy spot, I would write a check. I would start tithing immediately. You know, give him the same treatment that he gave the little kids who mocked the prophet's bald head and sent a bear to devour them. If a bear went rumbling onto that set and just ate Mike Huckabee, I'm like, oh, sorry. Yeah, I give up. You win. You're right. I've seen the proof. I'm a giant up. And it wouldn't be such a problem then, because it would mean that the big, great big bearded juvenile delinquent from the Bronze Age in the sky actually had something resembling morals. Well, that's true, too. At Lee in New York says, teaching tap dancing to a centipede. Bob, if you could do that, you could have fundraising-free radio forever. Let's see. I was talking about ruining jokes last night, but sometimes the punchline's enough, because I've told this a number of times talking to Scott in San Diego. The punchline to the joke that goes, the mouse is a ventriloquist. He's doing it all. Right. Don says, cat details. Now you're just worrying about details. The last refuge of the, you know. Oh, guilty as charged, I suppose. Kevin in Colorado Springs wants to know, why do so-called liberals bother to appear on the Fox News channel? They're given no chance to prove their point and are immediately cut off or interrupted if they even come close to proving their point. Well, that's true, but in the case of this woman, she's a regular. She's the token liberal, and she's there to perform the same function that for years and years and years and years, Alan Combs, who has since gone to his long home, did for the Hannity job, that is, to be a doormat for him. Heather says, Huckabee's lost his mind. I disagree. You have to have one before you can lose one. And now, if you didn't think Mike Huckabee was bad enough in this regard, well, enter Dana Lush. You know, spokes creep for the National Ruble Association. Spokes creep for an organization that literally empowers young white men to slaughter innocent citizens in the United States of America under the guise of, oddly enough, constitutional rights. Last night I mentioned the stupidity and arrogance of White House Press Secretary Jethreen Bodine. By the way, we have to sort this out. Steve in New York wants to know, if Huckabee's daughter is Jethreen Bodine, shouldn't we properly call Mike Huckabee Jed Clampett? No. Like some people know their Star Trek universe, I know my Beverly Hillbillies universe. Jethreen and Jethro were the son and daughter of Aunt Pearl. Aunt Pearl was the sister of Jed Clampett. And we never really found out who Mr. Bodine was. Remember, Jed, Steve, is Uncle Jed. Just like Granny is the mother of the woman whom Jed loved dearly and who gave him Ellie Mae and then up and died. There are some things in the background there that are worth pondering. That was part of the brilliance of it, because maternal mortality was a real thing in hillbilly country. Now remember, though, that family did not come from Appalachia. That family came from the Ozarks, but were still loosely termed hillbillies. But maternal mortality was a brutal fact of life in Appalachia, in the Ozarks, and in, well, much of 19th and up into the 20th. And guess what? It's on the rise now, and for instance, Cuba has a lower maternal mortality rate than the United States does. In fact, I think there are at least two countries between us and them that have lower rates of maternal mortality than this country does. No surprise, then, that a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual Christian like Mike Huckabee would be a diehard opponent of the idea that everybody in America, just because American, should be able to go to the doctor when that person is sick. Or maybe even go to the doctor before they get sick, so maybe they won't get sick so much. But anyway, Dana Lush, who has an entire blood bank's worth of blood on her own hands, decided to defend... Really, quit while you're behind, Dana. White House Press Secretary Jethreen Bodine's statement that God wanted Donald Trump to be president. And criticized the people who had found that to be a bit of an outsized whopper of a statement. So Dana Loesch said,
those same individuals who have no public condemnation for abortion, they own that now in their party. They want to mock Sarah Sanders for an aspect of her faith. If these individuals were familiar with their good book, they would realize that God's all-powerful. Permit me to Bible thump for a moment.
Well, sure, Dana Loesch, go right ahead. Thump it. God knows you haven't read it.
God's all-powerful. Doesn't matter who you are. If he wants to use you, he'll use you. There's always a double standard whenever you're talking about people of faith. They mock what they don't know, and it's mean-spirited.
Well, sister, I know it. I know it up one side and down the other. And just kind of makes me wonder how many times you've sat down to, say, a shrimp dinner. Yeah, you're going to hell, sis! Jesus, these people. It's been that kind of a day. Time out. Those were sneezes that I assure you, you did not want to have be part of the broadcast. Lee in New York says, Bob, please agree with me that The Beverly Ozarks is a less desirable show title. It certainly is. And in fact, it didn't even start out The Beverly Hillbillies. It started out The Hillbillies of Beverly Hills. And that did not... That got changed in rather short order. In fact, the first season, the intro included a pitch for Kellogg's. As the hillbilly truck drove past a Kellogg's billboard in Beverly Hills. I pay attention to these things. It's terrible. Absolutely true. Irish Dave says, you know, the graveyards here in the West are full up with markers that read, died in childbirth. Flavio, and I've got a story that, hey, Flavio, you don't have to call in or anything if you want to just send it in email-wise. My Portuguese pronunciation, Portuguese has always been just a mystery to me. I can dope out some stuff in Spanish, but all those A's and O's, how do you pronounce a guy whose first name is J-O-A-O? Is it still an H sound, or is it a J sound, or a J, is it Joao, Joao? I only ask because I've got a story. Social Darwinism, Flavio says, it was the 19th century English philosopher, biologist, anthropologist Herbert Spencer. Oh, I bet I know whose great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-granddaddy that was, who misinterpreted Darwin's natural selection and called it survival of the fittest. Count Peter Kropotkin countered with a monograph called Mutual Aid, a Factor in Evolution. Basically, no, it was not everyone for himself and God for all, the devil take the hindmost. No, it wasn't. That was not what Darwin set out to argue at all. So thanks for that. Speaking of token liberals, Ron in Raleigh says, where's your boy Juan Williams? My boy? Haven't heard from that guy in a coon's age. Oh, Ron. See, I get to do it, too, and that's not gimmick infringement. Just don't do that. Interesting story coming out of Washington, D.C., as we transition to some other stuff. The headmaster of a private school called Sheridan School, lots of them all over D.C., they They provide private school instruction from K through 8. And it costs more than $36,000 a year to send a kid there. Jessica Donovan, the headmaster, sent a letter out to the parents there at Sheridan School, saying that, no, the sports teams at Sheridan School would not be engaging in any sporting events with Emmanuel Christian School, where Mother Pence teaches art, because she wants to make sure that she doesn't have to teach art to any little Homer sectionals. The letter she sent said that the bigoted policies of Emmanuel Christian were an obvious challenge, because Sheridan School, on the other hand, has a fundamental belief in diversity and inclusion. You know, as long as the diverse included people have $36,000 a year to plop down for tuition. Now, that's probably not fair, because they might have some scholarships. In the beginning, as a show of diversity and inclusion, the kids from Sheridan School, who, when they played an away game of whatever sport at Emmanuel Christian School, were going to wear rainbow socks or rainbow warm-ups. But then the kids began telling Headmistress Donovan, is she headmaster? I don't know. Headmaster is the way, Jesus, Fox News, you know, because they're all terribly upset. Oh, outrage machine, sirens, whambulance. Students began telling Headmaster Jessica Donovan that they feel unsafe going to a bigoted institution for anything so much as a basketball game. In the letter, she said, as we talked more, we understood that some students did not feel safe entering a school that bans LGBTQ parents, students, or even families that support LGBTQ rights. You might recall that... We went through this. You can't not let me call him Mike Pencilneck Geek. Mike Dents. Vice President Mike Dents got all cranked up the wambulance and got up on his high horse and said, when people pointed out that his wife was going to make sure that she only taught art to little heteronormative children, that attacks on Christian education must end. You'll notice he didn't say that attacks on little LGBTQ kids must end. But it's not an attack. See, that's the problem. It's not an attack at all. It's freedom. We have free speech in this country, with which we can deploy at will, pretty much, to point out when these evangelical fundamentalist freaks are trampling the rights of others. Mm-hmm. Irish Dave wants to know, did the Clampets all have the same DNA? No. I mean, obviously, going back to the science lesson from diabetes snake oil cure salesman Mike Huxterby, there was 23 chromosomes, chromosome pairs from, or 23 chromosomes from, I don't, what did he say, from the mother and the father. So no, Ellie did not have the same genetic makeup as Uncle Jed. Well, thank you, Todd. Happy birthday, Bob. Todd writes, you're on fire again tonight. Have you noticed Sarah and her initials, SS? Just saying. I did. And Tracy sent me a photo the other day of Jethreen Bodine, done up as Sergeant Schultz, complete with the the uniform and the coal scuttle helmet and everything. Todd says, by the way, what was wrong with the Virginia lawmaker's statement? Not a damn thing, except for the fact that because it's an industry and not a moral crusade, the forced birth industry jumped on it and used it to probably raise a couple of million dollars in the space of a couple of days. That's all. Yeah, Todd signs off saying, no barbecue in sight. The coons are in Ron's yard. LOL. Y'all are just trying to get it. Oh, by the way, Todd was asking. It was really sweet. He was asking what we were going to do for Super... No. Brother Deacon Asa was asking me. Well, unbeknownst to me, Ferg brought home a pork loin today. And so for Super Bowl Sunday and post-birthday dinner, I'll be sorting out some sort of a hillbilly DIY fix for the ash pan on the acorn, because it's going to be up near 60 degrees come Sunday. And probably gonna do a repeat of that split open pork loin with the dried fruit and the cheese inside. That worked really, really well last time. Yeah, that'd be tasty. So just, FYI. Irish Dave says, hold it right there. Y'all saying that the Veeps resident don't have no sconces and shit such as that? Well, any decorating was probably done before Mike and Mother moved in. I'm sure with her exquisite taste, there are probably paintings of velvet Elvises and velvet bullfighters and velvet dogs playing poker and velvet Jesus hanging on the cross, bleeding velvet, red velvet blood. Classy bunch. Subject line, rainbow socks. Lee says, when you cannot show support for a minority of the population, it is easy to have them be on the receiving end of bias. True enough. So let's take a little break. No time check. But we will. We'll take a little break, because I blew right past the Green News Report Tuesday, and I felt terrible about it. But I'm not going to let it happen this evening. So let's see what Brad and Desi have for us. This is Fundraising Free Radio Week, the last day of it. This is The Horn, and I'm going to be right here. Hopefully you're going to be right there, and let's see what Brad and Desi have.
It's Thursday, January 31, 2019.
59 below zero in Grand Forks, North Dakota, 41 below in Minneapolis, and 48 below in Chicago.
Record extreme cold shuts down parts of the U.S., and it still doesn't disprove climate change.
It'll make a big difference to the United States economically.
Trump administration seems to concede Venezuela intervention is all about oil, plus Germany sets path to completely quit coal.
Quitters, all of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Pros and cons of the return of the polar vortex. Pro, going outside in a t-shirt and earning the respect of your peers. Con, getting a high five and having your hand snap off. There you go.
Oh, I hate when that happens. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, as we predicted on the last Green News Report, it would be redonkulously cold across much of the Midwest and Northeast. It turned out to be true, but hey, it's getting warmer.
Yes, parts of the U.S. Midwest were colder than even parts of Antarctica, Alaska, and Mount Everest this week amid the latest breakdown of the polar vortex when a wobbly, weakened jet stream spills extremely cold temperatures out of the Arctic. This round has shattered numerous daily and even some all-time low temperature records in the United States. Some states were forced to close offices and schools, warning of, quote, almost instant frostbite for anyone outside in the record cold, which has contributed to the deaths of at least 8 people as of airtime. Even the U.S. Post Office canceled mail delivery in 10 states to protect postal workers. But you better get used to these extreme swings, because this breakdown in the polar vortex, with warmer air pushing into the Arctic and displacing cold air into lower latitudes, has been occurring more frequently over the last 30 years. That's according to meteorologist Guy Walton in an interview on the broadcast.
What we're having right now, as far as global warming goes, is we're having a lot of warmth from the subtropics moving northward over the polar areas, where prior to, say, the 1970s, we hadn't been seeing that as much.
I wonder what changed.
And like clockwork, President Trump and his supporters responded with their usual nonsense, denying the scientific consensus on man-made global warming because of this outbreak of extreme cold in just a part of the U.S.
It's colder in Minnesota right now than it is at the North Pole.
Yeah, it's craziness.
Yes, it's craziness. Isn't it, Fox News? Isn't it wonderful when it turns cold? Idiots.
But at least one federal agency pushed back against the deniers this week without specifically referring to Trump. NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, posted to Twitter a child's cartoon explaining how even intense winter extremes are amplified by global warming.
The folks on Fox News, however, were unable to read it.
Of course, a few days of extreme cold in the United States does not change the documented fact that winters globally have gotten warmer on average over the last 30 years in the U.S. and everywhere, bringing with it new problems for water supplies, agriculture, economies reliant on winter tourism, and more.
It's craziness.
Meanwhile, in politics, the Trump administration's push for regime change in Venezuela to force President Nicolas Maduro out of power may actually be about getting at Venezuela's oil.
You think?
Democracy Now! Highlighted a comment by Trump's national security advisor, John Bolton, this week on the Fox Business Channel, in which Bolton stated that the administration's intervention, including new sanctions against Venezuela's oil industry, could actually benefit American oil companies.
It'll make a big difference to the United States economically if we could have American oil companies really invest in and produce the oil capabilities in Venezuela.
If only we could control all of the oil over all of the globe, all of the time. I don't know where these other countries get the idea that that oil should belong to them.
And for those too young to remember, John Bolton was a key architect of the U.S. invasion of Iraq, which resulted in American oil companies running Iraq's oil industry.
I'd be careful if I were you, Iran.
Finally, Germany is quitting coal. A national commission backed by the German government has committed the nation to shutting down all 84 of its coal-fired power plants within 20 years, part of a strategy to accelerate the country's shift to renewable energy and reduce its emissions 60% by 2030. Renewable energy is the leading source of electricity in Germany right now, but coal still supplies about 40%. Coal plant operators agreed to close nearly half of their coal plants in just 3 years, with a total phase out by 2038. And the plan calls for a $45 billion transition fund to assist coal-dependent regions with the changes.
Nice. They're going to have to do it sooner than 20 years, I'm afraid.
Yes.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Changes. Turn and face the strain. Changes. Don't want to be a richer man. Changes.
Well, I certainly hope that little clip doesn't screw up the file. Here we are, Thorn in the Side Thursday. By the way, just for fun. You remember the old Carson show when he'd say something like, Don Jr. is so stupid. I mean, he didn't say that it didn't exist then, but it will just, it, right. Well, this would be kind of fun if we had that level of interactivity, because I could say, Don Jr. is so stupid, and the whole Horn Family Community Congregation would reply en masse, how stupid is he? Good God, he's stupid. He took to the Twitter today and referred to Saturday Night Live as, which, by the way, there's a hashtag. That, thank you, Marty. How stupid is he? All caps. That's how we do it. Yes. He was aggrieved. Junior was. What did I say earlier about, well, maybe I was wrong about babies with no brain being viable outside the womb. I mean, he's certainly still out there. He was aggrieved by some jackass who tweeted, so 2020 Dem platform is no private health care, kill fully formed 2 seconds from birth babies, 70% marginal tax rates on property they hate, ban nearly every gun, also you're racist. This is basically a right-wing parody of a Dem platform, and it's real. It's so sad when little white wingers try to be funny, because they're about as funny as fucking cholera. So, Junior subtweets it and says, it's almost like a funny version of an SNL skit. No, really. Anybody with a functioning brain would know that it's SNL. That's not a typo. It's capital S, ampersand, capital L. Like savings and loan. Or sex and lemonade. S and L. I'm hoping that that will somehow play into the cold opening for SNL this week. Jesus. We got through the. I mean, I'm proud of this. We got through the first part of the first hour of the program. Lines are open, by the way. 304-574-8178 if you're new to the program. Or if you need us to carry the freight toll-free, 844-843-4676. 844-843-4676. 844-THE-HORN. And from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn. If you've got something that's just burning you up that needs to be discussed. Although we got through the first hour without a whole bunch of trumpery, we're not going to be able to stay that way, sadly. No, not at all. They've taken to doing these things, and it makes me wonder. It just makes me wonder. They do them with him sitting down. We don't know why that is. Not a lot of stand-ups for him anymore. If they want to let him run his mouth and blather and carry on, they sit him at a chair behind the desk. Who knows what they don't want us to see that's behind the desk. But earlier today, he said, because it was a big story, Our great U.S. Border Patrol agents made the biggest fentanyl bust in our country's history. Thanks, as always, for a job well done.
It was the Border Patrol on the border at a point of entry, because all that fentanyl was being brought into the United States in a, not in a series of tubes, but in fact in a big truck, thereby proving there is absolutely no necessity for a goddamn wall. Oops. Yeah. But they're all bizarre. All these appearances now. Somebody asked him about Jussie Smollett, who was attacked not far from the that disgusting, probably bedbug infested shithole Trump Hotel in Chicago. And he opened his mouth and the bats flew out. Well, that's true. That was also a match game. That was a Gene Rayburn bit too. The dumb Dora is so dumb. Dumb Donald is so dumb. How dumb is it? Right. That I had forgot about that. Marty pointing that as well out as well. We regret the error. You guys don't let me get away with anything. I had a note earlier today based on a mistake I made the other night. Maddie in Finland said Paul McCartney did not write a song called Richard Cory, but Richard Cory by Paul Simon is on Paul McCartney's album Wings Over America, sung by Denny Lane. Again, I appreciate the correction of the error. Thank you. Thank you, Maddie. Listening in Finland. Mm-hmm. So, a gay black guy gets attacked by guys who are shrieking, this is MAGA country, and they try to lynch him, and they throw bleach all over a black guy. Again, did I mention while shouting, this is MAGA country? Well, this was something that happened today.
I also want to ask you about Jussie Smollett. Have you heard about that story? The Chicago situation, the actor from Empire, who was allegedly attacked with racist and homophobic...
That, I can tell you, is horrible. I've seen it last night. I think that's horrible. It doesn't get worse, as far as I'm concerned.
Funny how he didn't let her continue and say while yelling, this is MAGA country, but never mind.
As far as the people are concerned, many of those people wanted me to stay out, but I didn't want to do it because people were getting hurt. People, what I think is the worst sin of all is the fact that we're allowing people to come into this country and sell drugs and human traffic and do all of these horrible things.
Huh? He wasn't attacked by drug-dealing people from south of the border, dipshit. He was attacked by a couple of white guys shrieking, this is MAGA country, who used epithets on him that included a hateful one for gay people and a hateful one for people who are black, which he is both. Your people coming into this country doing it. They didn't come into this country, dumbass. They were born here.
That if we had the simplicity of a well-constructed, beautiful barrier or wall, they wouldn't be able to come into our country. That, to me, is the great sin. And everybody knows it works. I watched this morning, early in the morning, somebody trying to justify walls are immoral. I mean, if walls are immoral, maybe we should take down all the walls that are built right now. You will see a mess like you've never seen before. So I only say this. I was elected.
Is any of this making any sense to any of you?
because I'm kind of screwed for it. It's like listening to a drunk, or I don't know, a speed freak.
Partially this issue, not as much as people say, but partially on this issue. This is a very important issue. Nothing to do with elections, nothing to do with votes, only to do with common sense and only to do with security. And
nowadays, when they do these sit-downs with him, where he's in the chair behind the table, they've always got a bunch of people standing behind him. My private theory is that it is a constant struggle to get the dosage right, as I've said before. And all those people are there to tackle him in case he decides to stand up and start ripping off his clothes and playing with himself. They'll take him to ground and scream that somebody's got a gun or something like that. Because when the spirochetes finally take total control of his executive and non-executive neurological functions.
If we don't put up a barrier or wall, a strong one, but one that looks good. In the old days, they used to build them, they looked...
As long as it looks good, right?
Terrible. Now we build them, they look really good. If we don't put up a physical barrier, you can forget it. Our country is going to be a very unsafe place. People are coming in, drugs are coming in, human trafficking is coming in, which is so horrible. Things are happening that won't happen after the wall is constructed. So we're building a lot of wall. We're building new sections starting in about 2 weeks. We're building some brand new sections, large sections, and the wall is getting built. I would like to build it even faster, but it's getting built, and it's getting built very substantially, as some of you see because you've been there. Yeah.
All of which was total moonshine. Not a word of truth in it. Yes, Marty. Marty says, did I really hear him sniff nearly every other word or sentence? Yes, Marty, you did. I mean, some of that was me playing, but that's obviously me. Marty says, clearly he's been watching the sequel to Sicario again. Oh, dear me. Yes. Let's run over and check in on the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Well, hey,
how are you?
I'm well. Are you warm?
I'm okay. I'm cold, but
how many feet? How many yards of snow did you get?
Plenty.
Yeah, too much.
Yes, too much. And I was playing around online, and I was doing something, and they said, "Well, hey, it's supposed to be about 50 Monday, so it's just really weird," but that's beside the point. Now, you were talking about the actor, or the gay actor that got...
Yes, Jussie Smollett.
Yes, he unfortunately got terrorized by some jackasses.
Oh, he was subjected to an attempted lynching.
I read that yesterday. I was so disgusted. And I don't know if you heard this, but I was doing something on Twitter earlier, and I think, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, that somebody that was in the press asked Trump about Smollett.
Yeah, that's the clip that I just ran.
And he said that something about, this is why we need that. He's in over his freaking head. He is in over his freaking head. He doesn't understand what is going on. He knows damn well, or he should know damn well, that there were white people who did this to this man. And, that's not why we need a fucking wall, and we don't need one. But, that's my take at this point. And Nancy's not going to give me any money for the wall that I can see at this point. But from
There's no need, nor has there ever been. It's not particularly complicated.
And he creates his own emergencies or his own chaos, unfortunately. And it's a mess. It is a mess. And I was doing something else earlier, and I think yesterday you were talking about Jared and his the fact that he shouldn't even have security. Supposedly it was rejected, or his security clearance had been rejected, but somebody went over someone else and gave him the security anyway. And I guess they did that for just him, but
30 people,
29, 30
other people. The only thing he didn't get was the CIA clearance. And here's the follow-up to that. The woman who blew the whistle, she's been suspended from work now. Trisha Newbold had filed a discrimination complaint against this political hack, Carl Klein, who overruled the intelligence professionals who took a pass on letting Jared and a whole bunch of potential criminals have top secret security clearances. And she told the world, and now she's been handed a 2-week suspension from the White House security office on a charge of defiance of authority.
She shouldn't have been, they should not bring charge of defiance of authority. She knew that those 30 people shouldn't have had those clearances. And he claims, I'm not kidding you, he claims that he's going to be right for going over all the, for not listening to his security. You know, the security advisors that he has.
Well, it got so bad that the Republicans in the Senate today passed an admonition against him ignoring his own intelligence assessments.
Mm-hmm.
That actually may prove to be a watershed moment.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was mostly Republicans who did it. It was an outright admonishment over his decision that it's time to get out of Syria.
Mm-hmm.
And that was Republicans doing it. That tells you that there may be enough support there. And I realize this is a stretch, Heather. When the time comes and the evidence all comes out, to get rid of his ass.
It is time to get rid of his ass.
But the point is, in an impeachment situation, you have to have 67 senators.
Yeah, that's the issue.
They had to have 60 votes today to pass what they passed.
Ugh. Well, you know, something else that pisses me off is the Deripaska sanctions that did not get put.
That vote was taken before the intel chiefs testified and pointed and gave, you know, the national assessment and everything, and pointed out what he was ignoring.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of important, just like it's important that enough of a coalition pulled together to pass this senatorial admonition of him.
Ugh.
Would they have the nerve to scrounge up 67 votes to convict him on a bill of impeachment, that remains to be seen. I'm not sanguine about it. I don't have a whole lot of hope for it, but we can't know that for a fact.
Right. But it just, he's a mess. And I've said it, and I keep complaining, but what the hell's happening to this country?
Well, we're learning something, Heather. We are learning that we are learning, and it is a hard, brutal, expensive, and bloody lesson. We are learning that, and it's a truism, that you do not have to have a majority to screw up this country, that a simple plurality will do. Because a majority did not vote for him for president, and a plurality of people in states wildly less populated than where the major population centers of this country are enough to do massive amounts of harm to the country.
Mm-hmm. So, and here's something that's totally off the subject.
Yeah.
And it's nothing to do with Trump, thank God. But last night, me living as cold, living where I am, as cold as it is, our governor requested for people to turn down the heat, which is understandable and completely fine. Well, I was doing something on Twitter, and I found her little video saying, please do so. Well, I posted it. Not only did I post that, but I ended up blocking half the people that were responding to it because later on there was an explanation that there was an explosion where they were getting the gas for the heating, which is real understandable. They don't want that to happen again. That's okay. Well, you know, people are just not getting it. They don't, you know, they don't understand. And for her to go ahead and say, look, turn down your heat, please, and ask, and people to not do it. I mean, that's, I'm sorry, but if there was an explosion, which there was, that's going to cause more problems. And I just couldn't believe some of the people in that thread. It was just, oh, good God, would you guys wake up and at least try to understand why she's doing
so, that. So what? They were calling her commie and socialist and godless heathen and all of that?
Oh, yeah. They pretty much would probably say she's a hoe or something stupid, but, you know. But it just, they don't, you know, people don't get when you're trying to help them and say, look, something, this happened, this is why we're doing this, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it just, and what's really bad is some of those people might have even voted for her. And when she says, you know, and I just, how do I say this? I think that after what my state has just been through with the water issue.
Is still going through with the water issue?
Yes. That kind of crap. I don't want to see shit like that happen. So I'm trying to watch what happens. And, you know, it's just.
Well, see, conservatives and Republicans, Heather, object to the idea of shared sacrifice. If there's any sacrifice going to be done, it's going to be everybody else sacrificing for them because mm-hmm. they're special little snowflakes who can't be inconvenienced or made to feel anything but MAGA-induced happiness. And screw everybody else. You know, you don't just say, hey, turn your thermostats down because I'm feeling like being mean. You're trying to make sure that everybody can live instead of having a utility grid disaster that would threaten the lives of God knows how many tens of thousands.
Right. And another thing was, it was only supposed to be until 12 o'clock tomorrow. So, it just drives me nuts that people would not listen. And it's not good if explosions are happening. And it just, I'm not dumb, but I'm not so stupid that I can't learn. How shall I say this? I'm not dumb, but I'm not so stupid I can't have some kind of feeling and empathy and, you know, whatever. If somebody asks me to do something, I will try. If I can help, I'll try to help.
That's not a question of intelligence or stupidity. That's a question, or that's a matter, Heather, of empathy. having the ability to express concern for someone other than yourself. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Heather, it's been a lovely conversation. Do please stay warm, and hopefully we will talk soon.
All righty. Have a great night.
All right. You take care now. Bye. That's our buddy Heather trying to stay warm. And I know we've got other friends up that way who are doing the same up in Michigan. And let's run over to the other line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi. This is Mary in Maryland.
Well, hi, Mary. How are you?
Oh, okay. The last time I called, it was during the Kavanaugh hearings.
Yes, I remember.
And I was worried that Kavanaugh may have changed the tire on my car. And I figured out the next night from what you were covering with Ed Whelan's attack on Kavanaugh's lookalike that it was probably the Kavanaugh's lookalike that changed my tire.
I guess we'll probably never know, huh?
I was thinking maybe the lookalike was going to sue for defamation, but.
No, he served his purpose.
Yeah. Well, I really want to blow the whistle on the Washington Times.
Oh, God. Well, are they still a going concern? I thought it was the Washington Examiner now.
No, those are two separate entities.
Okay, so the Washington Times used to be the Mooney Times. Same bunch?
It still is.
Okay.
Yeah, I worked there for many years and was illegally retaliation fired as soon as I reported harassment. I don't blame people if they think, well, you shouldn't work at places like that because, you know, you should know ahead of time that's how they treat people. I understand that argument. But I grew up disfigured by my mother. So it's been very hard for me to find work.
Yeah, we talked about that back then.
Yeah. So, yeah, I got sent over there by a temp agency in the early 90s. And I had been trying to avoid working there. There were times when I answered blind ads for graphics. And when I found out it was the Washington Times, I didn't go in for any interviews. But at this point in the early 90s, I was really desperate. So when I found out that this is where a temp agency was going to send me, I went. And my first reaction, though, really was, well, at least it's not Catholic. So, I worked there long enough to see just a huge number of changes. And they've had massive layoffs over the years, a lot of infighting. It's really a patent place of sex scandals. the hypocrisy. There's a lot of abuse of the employees. Not everybody there is terrible. I mean, there are some nice people, but usually it's the nice people that get laid off. But it's very mismanaged. I heard a lot of shocking stuff. I think there was a lot of money laundering going on. I heard that from a guy that worked in the mail room. He would deliver the mail throughout the building, and he on the upper floors he saw. I guess there were like suitcases. I don't remember how he described it. Just huge containers of cash. And I think that kind of ties in with other things that I had that were reported by some of the former Mooney members, that some of the Moon children and
yeah, the Reverend Sun Myung Moon dropping dead didn't change anything, I guess.
No, but I think when they would visit from Korea or Japan or wherever.
Korea.
They would fly in with they have a huge membership too in Japan.
I know, but the Moon family is Korean.
Right. But they would fly in with huge suitcases of cash. I guess they flew into different locations because I think they have a big family compound in New York. There's another one in West Virginia somewhere, and then they visit the Washington Times too. I heard a lot of stories though about a lot of managers were pressuring the younger women for sex. They've had scandals too. They had a one guy that was running the human resources department. He was arrested for it was one of those stings, child pornography stings. The sexism, and I, there were people that were pretty insulting to me because of my scarred face. I worked, the first department that I worked in was production. They were in the process of changing over from paste-up to a desktop for the production of their pages. And they laid off too many people in production and too many paste-up people, so they still needed some paste-up help. And I managed to hang on there during all of the changes that they made and how they produced the paper. And then the department started getting a lot smaller because the technology of printing kept changing. And somebody advised me at one point, well, you better move over to another department. There's an opening over there because we're laying off more people in this department. So I moved over to legal advertising, which it's horribly boring. Basically, you type the legal notices that nobody reads, but actually that's the part of the paper that made the most money.
Because mandatory legal notices, right.
Right. There would be huge ads from county governments regarding bond issues or zoning or and then there were the foreclosure ads. And when I started, there were hardly any foreclosure ads, but then that big foreclosure boom happened. And the department did not get any larger, so I was just really overworked. And I was told that I was a salaried employee. And I ended up often working 80 hours per week because I had so much work to do, and I was afraid if I didn't do it, they'd fire me. But I was really good at it because I would catch mistakes. A lot of the ads that were submitted by the different law firms or the courts, the law firms, they wouldn't even look at their documents, and I would notice all these mistakes and catch them. So they were really grateful. And I got along well with these two guys and the boss initially until they hired this really attractive young Korean lady. All of a sudden, I was dog food. And the two men in my department just continually bullied me for not, why can't you be young and pretty like her? Why can't you do our work?
What a hateful question.
She would help them with their work, and then they would just goof off and hit on her. And I had my own work, and I was already pretty overloaded myself. So it just kept escalating. It was really bad, and I was thinking about quitting. But I was told that she was trying desperately to get out of the department. And then I noticed that she was doing work for other departments, and then she did leave. But my two male colleagues kept up their insults. And I couldn't get management to stop it. At one point, it was so bad, this one guy was just screaming insults at me. A whole room full of people, about 15 people, were so disgusted, they started screaming back at him, stop it. Show some respect. Just stop it. And he kind of toned it down after that, but both he and the other guy, though, they were going up to human resources, and they were making a lot of false complaints about me. I'm not really sure what all of it was about, but we had a boss that was very much like Trump. He looked like he was a mini-me Trump, or like the bastard child of George Costanza and Donald Trump.
Oh, there's a mental image I never wanted in my brain.
He would sleep at his desk all day, and then when he wasn't sleeping, he was bragging about his adultery, and then he'd leave early, and so most of the work fell on me. So I did a huge amount of the work in the department, and the boss started bugging me though about how much time I was spending. And I thought he was just trying to cover his ass. But the one of the other male colleagues, though, he had a drinking problem. He also considered himself God's gift to women. He would say really cruel things about the looks of the women that would come in to visit. The women that would stop by to chat with our department. And I felt really bad for them. On one occasion, there was an after-work party, and it was staged by another department, but the company had almost gone out of business, and so this other department wanted to hold this glad we're still in business party. This is when the two Moon brothers were fighting. One of them wanted to shut down the print part of the paper and just be totally online. And this other faction of the Unification Church bought that brother out. And so that meant that we still had our jobs, because most of the people there were working on the print edition. And our department was the only department that was actually making any money. We were bringing in about $6 million a year. And that whole process, though, killed a lot of our business, though, because we couldn't guarantee that we'd be able to place these legal notices. So we lost a lot of advertising until the the whole ownership thing got settled, but we didn't get back the majority of the ads. But it started picking up, though. But anyway, at this party that was after work, my colleague and I went together. We went in his car together to this little pub down on Capitol Hill to meet up with the others. And he left early and came back. But when he came back to pick me up, he was already drunk. And at the bar, he actually propositioned me in front of the others, and I was very embarrassed. I mean, he had insulted me a lot over the years, and I kind of hoped maybe they hadn't heard what he was saying. And we finally left, and he just behaved horribly as we walked back to through the subway system back to where the car he had parked his car, and he was going to take me back to the Times parking lot. So he could go his way, I could go my way. But he kept propositioning me. And I was just so angry. He was so drunk, he called in sick, I think, probably the next 3 days. I wrote him an angry letter when he came back. And
just out of curiosity, how long ago was all this?
That particular incident was 2010. And then I was finally fired because his behavior was so bad. He scared an intern because he was drunk all the time at work. He was always screaming at me. He was always calling me by my last name. He just screamed, "You are so stupid. Have I told you today how stupid you are? You are the stupidest woman I ever met." He'd say horrible things about my looks.
Did you ever go to EEOC?
I tried. Well, what happened is they fired me because I mentioned to HR that he was saying inappropriate things. The intern took a video of him threatening me. She shared it with upper management. She shared it with John Solomon, who was one of the executives at the time. She shared it with HR, and everybody they all just blamed me. He was threatening me. He wanted me to give him my checking account because I'm an old maid. He said, "You don't have anybody to spend it on. You should give it to me. You don't deserve your money." I tried to treat it as a joke. So, I was fired because I was first suspended because I kept trying to confer with the intern because she was very disgusted with his behavior. And she wondered why I didn't do anything about it. And he made it very hard for us to do our work because he was continually screaming and yelling at us. And he wasn't doing any work himself. And the company had already fired another woman who blew the whistle on him. And so I was suspended because I sent her an email. I was trying to, verify my observations about what was going on. Well, I got suspended for that. It was okay for him to be carrying on horribly. And there were other witnesses. There were other people that were very bothered by his behavior. And then I was fired because I left a voicemail message for another woman, letting her know her work was going to increase because she would have to do my work. Because I was being suspended because he was drunk. And because I referred to him as drunk, I was fired. It was okay for him to be drunk and to threaten women, to demand sex, to insult them about their looks, he just made the crudest comments. But it was not okay for women to talk, to politely confer with each other about what was going on, which I understand now. We were engaging in concerted activity. We were discussing a terrible work situation. But he threatened to, he was very incoherent, but he was threatening to shoot me.
What a nightmare existence.
Well, our boss, though, he threatened to shoot me too. And I try not to take it too seriously. I always try to be a good sport about things.
You know, there's really no such thing as being a good sport about somebody threatening to shoot you.
Well, this is what I've grown up with, though. You know, when you grow up disfigured, bullied by your own family and by strangers and by nuns and priests, etc., you don't react to everything. You only try to react to the worst. And because you don't want to be the boy that cried wolf. That's why I put up with a lot, because if I complain too much about the smaller stuff early on, you know, it's just counterproductive. I don't know. You're damned if you do, damned if you don't. But I just saw a lot of sexual harassment there, though. But one of the reasons why I was calling, though, the Times and John Solomon, who has since left, he's gone over to the Hill. They had been picking on Congressman Raul Grijalva.
Grijalva, yeah.
Yes, because apparently.
Well, the Hill does more than lean right. I mean, it's kind of a rag, really.
Well, he apparently had to settle a complaint in his office, and a woman was paid about $50,000. She had worked there about 3 months. Someone, possibly the congressman, had been drinking on the job. And she thought there was a
well. He has denied categorically. Representative Grijalva has ever drinking on the job, or being drunk at work. There was a settlement with a disgruntled employee. There was no sexual overtone to it. There was no Me Too to it. But that didn't stop the White Wing from taking it and running with it.
I'm sure whatever. It was nothing compared to what I went through, and I don't think I even described very well what I went through. It was I left out a lot. I think Zinke was attacking Congressman Grijalva because of what the Washington Times wrote. It would be wonderful if Congressman Grijalva could say something. I think don't they in the early morning session of the House, can't they make speeches before the House convenes? You know, they can
morning sometimes, evening sometimes, but I have a feeling that in a story like this, it's one of those situations where it's kind of like what grannies the world over have told their grandkids: don't stir a pile of shit with a stick. You'll only make it smell shittier. It's probably a situation where the less said, the better, because there's no right answer for these sort of character assassination attacks. It's not like anything's going to make them stop attacking.
Do you think it might be a good idea, though, if I just called his office to share what happened to me at the time?
It's not for me to tell you what to do or not to do. This is not that kind of a program. I'm just thinking probably that they've adopted the idea that they're going to let them rage and flail and do what they can and do what they're going to do one way or the other. Because see, even if you come back and say yeah, but you, it doesn't matter. We're not talking about rational people. We're talking about Republicans, okay?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'll try calling there. But I had a couple other issues, though. Another thing that occurred,
I don't want to cut you off, but I've got people on hold.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
We'll delve into some more of this at a later date. Is that okay?
Oh, okay. I was hoping to find out if you know anything about how to respond to a Facebook hack, because I think my ex-boss at the time has hacked into my Facebook account.
Well, the first thing you always do is go in and change your password.
But would I be able to catch? Is there a forensic way of tracking down though who may have hacked into it?
No. Not without the expenditure of massive amounts of time and resources that you probably don't have. That's not me being mean, but no. Change your passwords.
Aren't there companies that do that though? I mean,
not without gut busting wads of money.
Yeah, I might be willing to spend some money.
Well, the first thing you do, because it costs you not a nickel, is go change your password.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Mary, you have yourself a good evening.
Oh, okay, thanks. You too.
Take care. Bye now.
Okay, all right. Bye-bye.
Mary calling from Maryland. The Mooney Times has been a cesspool for a lot of years. I remember when the United Press International was a respectable news agency. Then the Reverend Moon got hold of it. All right, let's go back over to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program. And all you had to do was wait another 10 seconds, but you didn't. And over to Scott in San Diego. Hey, Scott.
That was me, Bob. The thing is, with the stress line, I just don't get good audio on it. It's all distorted and stuff, and I know it's probably not your fault. Probably not my fault. Probably just as one of those things. It was just one of those things. One of my favorite songs, the lyrics of which I cannot bring to mind at the present moment. I don't know if Mary knows how to reach me, but I am very good at advice to people who are happier than I am. Those are the only people I will give advice to, people who are happier than me. And there are very few of them, but occasionally one squeaks in and they benefit and I benefit and it's all wonderful. But that's not why I called.
Okay.
Why did you call? Oh, I know. Well, you were talking about the topic went over to newspapers and newspapering and stuff. And having grown up in the D.C. area, I know a fair bit about the newspaper racket in that region. I remember when the afternoon paper, the Washington Evening Star, was not a bad newspaper. Now, granted, it was a like Republican/conservative, old school type newspaper. But it did add a little excitement to the media market back in the day. I mean, the Washington Star, by the way, the connection to the Washington Times is when the Star went under in like 81 or something, Reverend Moon took a lot of his megabucks and basically bought the printing and offices complex in Southeast Washington that had been owned by the Star. But that paper, when it was still the Evening Star, it had been around since the mid 1850s.
And wow.
Yeah, ran into a little bit of trouble. In the 30s, I guess, it bought into a radio station in D.C., AM, obviously, back in the 30s. And then they got an FM, and then they got a TV channel, and they had the afternoon paper. And they were fat and happy there for a while because up until really the mid to late 60s, the Washington Post was not the powerhouse that it later became. It was kind of a drab, dull, gray newspaper, okay? And Ben Bradley was one of the people who really kind of goosed the Post into viability, in the late 60s and into the 70s. But anyway, the Star basically hit upon hard times. There was another afternoon newspaper, the Washington Daily News, that went under in like 71, and the Star incorporated a lot of its features and writers and stuff, and even that didn't save it. And then around 1980, Time Incorporated bought the Washington Star, and even that didn't help it. And it finally went, you know, down the drink in around 81 or so. But D.C., when I was growing up, was still a three-newspaper town, one morning and two afternoons, battling for eyeballs and advertisers and stuff like that. But now, I mean, newspapering ain't what it used to be. I would think that in my lifetime, there's probably going to be a handful of newspapers, daily, you know, dead tree publications. And that'll be it. By the time I shuffle off this mortal coil, it will have gone the way of the proverbial dodo. But anyway, that's what I know about newspapering. But it did inspire a TV viewing tip. If you and the people in the Horn family can stand another of my many TV viewing tips. Actually, I have two of them, but one of them has...
Well, as the wise old owl in the Tootsie Pop commercial said, let's find out.
Yes. How many licks does it take to get to the chewy chocolate
center? The center of a Tootsie Roll Pop, yes.
I don't know. I always bite into it after about 4 minutes. So, all right. Well,
I was always very patient. I mean, there's no such thing as counting the licks, but... I'm a dissolver, not a grinder.
Well, see, that's the difference between you and me. I want that chewy chocolate center, and I want it damn quick. I don't have time to lick. I want it quick. That's my motto. When I run for president,
you know, Scott,
we're talking Tootsie Pops. There's nothing dirty.
That doesn't matter. This community will happily drive the Horn bus down into the gutter at the first inkling of innuendo. You should know that by now.
I don't have
time to lick. I want it quick. Jesus Christ, man.
Well, I don't know where your mind went, but sincerely, my hand to God or whoever else is up there, I was talking Tootsie Roll Pops. I like the grape ones.
Oh, sure you were.
I was. You don't have the confidence in me that you ought. You know, sometimes...
No, I have empirical fucking proof.
Well, you're living in the past then. That's your issue.
And by the way, okay, if we're going to go down this road, Charms Pops. I'm not talking about Blow Pops. I'm talking about classic old, you know, sort of slab-shaped Charms Pops.
I miss those. They don't make them no more?
There's a candy store in the Lower East Side of Manhattan where maybe you can get them.
Well, Charms came in two forms.
Because I know if I go and I order it on Amazon, it'll probably be made out of reduced secretions of people from fucking concentration camps. So no.
Wait a minute. You said secretions. You're talking dirty, Bob. Your mind's in the gutter.
Well,
Bob.
Why not? Just give up.
All right. Yeah, but Charms used to come in a pack like Lifesavers.
Yeah, and the government apparently they got a big contract to supply those to the government. And way, way back to when I watched the HBO series Generation Kill, I never knew about the Charms Curse.
I didn't know there was one.
But if you read the book that it's based on, or you watch the miniseries, and it was really good.
And what is the series?
Generation Kill.
Okay.
It's about a Marine recon company invading Iraq.
Okay.
But apparently there's deep superstition in the United States Marine Corps around those little packages of charms because they're cursed. And nobody will eat them. They throw them out of their meal kits. Because it's like the minute you pop one in your mouth, you're going to be KIA. Something awful's going to happen to you. And I checked it out with a couple of fairly recent members of the Marine Corps, and they're like, oh, fuck yes, nobody eats the, God damn, no, what do you think, we're stupid?
Well, it's like the supposed curse if you're an athlete and you get your picture on the cover of Sports Illustrated. Isn't there some belief that...
And the Wheaties box curse, too, I think. No, it's Sports Illustrated's curse. And then there's the best new artist Grammy curse.
No, I don't know that one.
Oh, yeah, you get best new artist at the Grammys and you're done.
Huh. Now here's the quadruple whammy. You're up for best new artist at the Grammys. You're sitting there reading about it at the morning breakfast table, eating your bowl of Wheaties. After which you have a charms candy.
You're just screwed.
And
We're all screwed, Bob. I mean, that's how that works.
Well, there you go. So don't do that. If you were thinking of doing anything.
Yeah, doctor, it hurts when I do this. Yeah, well, don't do that.
That's right. But, yeah, charms. Man, I haven't seen those in years. And what's the deal?
The other thing, those fuckers that make lifesavers. God damn it. Quit screwing with the little teeny tiny things that bring me, you know, an iota of happiness. They changed the lineup in the five flavors lifesavers.
No.
Yeah, it used to be cherry, orange, pineapple, and green, which was sort of lime-ish.
Yeah.
Well, they're not, the pineapple and the green are goddamn gone now.
Oh, no.
And there used to be entire rolls of Lifesavers sours.
And the
lemon sours were awesome. No more.
While
we're at it, I even went so far as to write the, you know, because we sublet the old holler tree from the Keebler Elves. For Friday on the Front Porch. It's where we keep the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. I actually wrote them one time and said, what the hell ever happened to the iced raisin bars? Well, we have no plans to reintroduce those at these times. Well, that's not what I asked you. What the fuck happened to them?
I'm still trying to figure out what happened to a company called Sunshine Bakers that used to make a long, maybe 4-inch wide, maybe 1/4 inch thick pastry type of cookie. But it was like a big, long Pop-Tart. But inside of the pastry cookie type thing was kind of a raisiny...
goo.
Goo, yes.
Well, we've gone from secretions to goo, so...
Well, no, you said goo. Let the record
show, I said secretions, too.
Yeah, it's your mind again. Just down there in that old gutter. I'm surprised they have gutters in your part of West Virginia, Bob, because you folks are so behind the times.
Well,
except when it comes to...
The world the world needs ditch diggers, too, you know?
Well, yes. And sidewalk superintendents. That's what I want to be when I grow up. I want to lean on my shovel in my coveralls supervising the job. I want to be a sidewalk superintendent. So... until I'm beaten half to death by the workers in the ditch with their shovels. See, that's a two-edged shovel, that is. But that's not what I call it.
Well, this—it's at some point in time, I think I'm just going to rename this program Bob Kincaid's Geriatric Radio. because I just got a note from Ron and Raleigh saying, yeah, I used to buy these things at the movie theater. They cost a nickel. And there's a link to the Charms Sweet Pops 40-piece box, they're still for sale. I bet they don't taste near as good. But it's $9.60 for 40 of them. But, you know, again, they're probably... Look, one of them's fucking blue. They were never fucking blue, okay? They just weren't. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Blue. I mean, I'm old enough. I remember George Carlin asking, "Who has the blue food?" There's no blue food. Well, what about blueberries? Fuck you. They're purple. It's not blue. Yep.
Well, before we leave,
and there's
candy.
No and the grape ones were good. The grape ones. Where's the lemon ones? Where's the goddamn lemon ones?
Well,
suddenly we don't like the flavor of sweet and lemon together. What the hell is happening to this country? God
culture,
damn it.
Culture and society and good, solid, fun traditions have gone just right down the tubes. I mean, do you know if February 14th is Valentine's Day and there will not be those little sweetheart hearts with the messages like "be mine"? Because the company that makes them apparently hit upon hard times, and the new people who own them won't be up and running in time enough to make the little candy sweethearts, not sweet tarts, but those.
No, I remember them. They had no flavor whatsoever.
They're like Necco wafers.
They were the candy equivalent of the Host at a mass. You know, no flavor, no nothing.
Yes. Yet another thing.
Well, you know, it's one of those things. You know how it is. Your birthday comes around, and you ponder the universe, and you stare at your navel, and then whatever happened to the goddamn Charms Pops and the Lifesavers Sours? The bastards are ruining the planet.
Yeah, it's Trump's fault. Yeah, he talks about making America great. Well, is it an important, a minor yet important somehow, aspect of greatness? Stuff that you can count on, like, oh, I don't know, government workers getting paid.
Oh no, this is one of those. This is one of those moments when I wish there were, millions and millions and millions of members of the Horn Family Community Congregation, because we could start a thing and we could get my goddamn ice raisin bars back. I mean, yeah. I don't eat a lot of junk food. I really, really don't. Most of what I eat is reasonably healthy. I mean. There's grits involved. We talked about that. But, goddamn, yeah. I'm in Appalachia. What do you want? But, you know, every now and then, I confess. Agnes and I go through one of those industrial bags of Reese's Miniatures. I refer to it as the 50-pound bag. About once every 3 weeks.
There you go.
I mean, they're heavy. You could swing one of these people and give them a closed head injury. They're big. That's pretty much it.
One of life's little pleasures, literally.
Yeah, but a box of a packet, because they were so delightful. I mean, they were raisin. They were like oatmeal raisin cookies, only they were rectangular and they had a white sugary glaze and like two or three stripes. You remember?
I do.
And just delightful. And instead, we've got... That's another one of those trends. It came along in the mid-80s. Soft and chewy cookies. And I remember one of the early brands was Almost Home. And I looked at a buddy of mine and said, "These aren't Almost Home. These are almost fucking done."
Yeah, I know. I remember. That's another thing. Stuff that doesn't last long on the shelves. That comes and goes, that somebody has a bright idea in some company and they hire some agency to drum up a campaign and then they ramp up production and send them through the distribution channels. And in 6 to 8 months, you find them at Big Lots. I don't know if they have Big Lots where
you
are,
yes.
But it's...
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I remember once my very, very favorite mustard on earth showed up at Big Lots.
Your favorite mustard?
Mustard. Yeah, I have a favorite mustard. That's all right.
Well, I don't think I've heard of which one it is.
It's out of Cleveland, and it's called the Original Stadium Mustard.
No, I don't know that
one. It was expensive and hard to get, and every now and then Kroger would have it. I walked into Big Lots one day, and there were flats of it.
Far as the eye could see.
And, like a dollar a bottle or something.
Oh, man.
So I immediately plopped down $24 plus tax and got a case of that shit because I knew if it was at Big Lots, I would never see it anywhere else again because Big Lots is where brands go to die.
Yes, yes. My, my. But and it's called Stadium Mustard?
The original original Stadium Mustard, and that was what it was. It was the mustard that they used to serve in the old stadium, in the old stadium where the Cleveland Indians played.
Wow.
And it was just, it wasn't Dijon, and it wasn't that hyper yellow, plain yellow. It was somewhere between Grey Poupon, Dijon, and plain old French's. And it was perfect. It made the perfect deviled egg. It was perfect on a hot dog. It was perfect with a bratwurst. There was nothing that it wasn't. And so.
Well, that's why they had to get rid of it.
And
it was too good.
And it took years. Well, no, it was the product. It was the product of an entrepreneurial crusade, if you will, quest. Mm-hmm. I hate the word crusade. But the guy who did it, you know, scrounged up the money, got the recipe, figured out where it was coming from, and remarketed it. And I just discovered it on a lark, and some Cleveland buddies said, "Oh yeah, that's the mustard." My meaningless Cleveland accent. And then I was right there with them. One of those gigantic goddamn Slimans corned beef sandwiches from Cleveland with nothing but that stadium mustard on it and that thin Melba rye. Happiness. Just happiness.
Take you home, Bob.
Oh, and I mean, I was so fond of that stuff. I don't mind talking about it. I would actually take it and, you know, put a little dot on my index finger. Just, mustard. You know, I love it.
Dab a little behind
a little
ear.
Yeah, a little dab will do you, you know.
When you want to feel special. Well, before we leave newspapers, I happen to think of another thing. Well, no, I guess we didn't. We branched off into the candy and cookie aisle. But when did this happen? Now, let me give you some background. I grew up in the 60s reading newspapers, even delivered more than a few in the course of my young entrepreneurial career. Okay, so I read newspapers growing up. Every place I've ever lived, I subscribed to the newspaper. Among those places, Kansas City, Corpus Christi, Texas, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Cincinnati, Ohio. But then when I came here, the San Diego Union Tribune at the time was owned by it was still owned more or less by the family that had had it for years, and they were rather conservative. And then they sold it to a real estate entrepreneur. See, that was bad news and a warning right there. But this guy, Doug Manchester, ran it for a couple of years, and just so far right wing, it was unreal. And I refused to read it, to buy it, to quote it, to have anything to do with it. I wouldn't even put it at the bottom of Punky the Cockatiel's birdcage. San Diego Union Tribune was just such a colossal fuck up of newspapering. So
sounds like how I feel about the Beckley Register Herald.
Yes. A year or so ago, a liberal
It's an
guy,
an insult to hamsters. Yes.
Yes. About a year ago, a liberal guy, a doctor, I believe, based in California, up north somewhere, bought the San Diego Union. And now that it's been some time, I may pick up a copy and look at it, because he wrote a big, like, personal editorial saying, you know, we know where this paper has been in the past, and right now and forevermore, we're not going to go that way. We're going to go a more rational and sane way. So it's been some months since he did that, and maybe I'll give him a chance at long last. But I say all that as a preamble. I have been, until I got here, have been a newspaper consumer. So I don't know when this happened, and what I'm referring to is, when did the broadsheet newspapers, not the tabloids that you could read on the bus without knocking anybody's hat off, not the tabloids, the broadsheets. When did the broadsheet newspapers shrink down to the size of an old Look magazine or old Life magazine? When the hell did that, where was I when that happened, and why didn't I notice it? Do you understand what I'm asking?
Yeah, no, I know exactly. And I remember reading about the downsizing a few years ago. It was about the same time that a half a gallon of ice cream stopped being a half a gallon.
What time period are we talking? 90s?
What,
80s?
4 or 5 years?
No, but well, I noticed it even before then. It's been a good 20 years since I've noticed it, but it had apparently happened prior to that. So 20 years ago would have been, what, the mid-90s, mid to late 90s?
No, 20 years ago would have been, yeah, 1999.
Okay.
You're having the same problem ciphering that Howard Schultz had.
Well,
yeah, no, my favorite Democratic president of the last 50 years, FDR.
Well, I hope that guy will just find something else to have as a hobby.
Well, you know, in a way, I keep, because for some reason or another, they find their way into the media. And I keep waiting for a truly intelligent billionaire to show up. Because I think they're as rare as goddamn hen's teeth. Because if you have real intelligence, you're not, I think it's preclusive of having that relentless drive to just grub for more money.
Are there such people as that?
This country used to produce them. I think about, and I'm sure he was a Republican, whatever. But the World War II generation of which my parents came from, or were part, they had real respect. And God, the minute I mention the guy's name, I'm going to get 70 dozen emails. People are like, oh, he was a because that's just how it works. But Henry J. Kaiser.
Oh yeah.
In the middle of the war against global fascism, we had after Pearl Harbor, we had a desperate need for ships, and Henry Kaiser said, "I'll build them on both coasts. They may not be the best in the world. Some of them may sink as soon as they come out of the slips."
And some of them did.
And so the Liberty ships were born, but they also created a class of small aircraft carrier called the CVE.
Mm-hmm.
And they were referred to generally as Jeep carriers because they were to a full-size vehicle what a Jeep was to a car, or to a full-size aircraft carrier what a Jeep was to a car.
Yeah.
And the Navy gave them the designation CVE. CV was a full-size aircraft carrier like the one my dad was on. CVE was a carrier vessel escort. But the people who had to sail on them said that CVE stood for combustible, vulnerable, expendable.
Yeah.
Because they were a Liberty ship with a deck with a flight deck stapled on it. And they expanded the seagoing air capacity in the war in the South Pacific at a time when we desperately needed it. And my uncle flew off of one and said that the steel hull was damn thin that you could hear fish banging their heads into it.
Oh no.
And you could just about sink one with a can opener, and the Japanese torpedoes were far more effective than ours were, and we learned that to our horror on a number of occasions. But there was one particular battle. It's the one that winds up with the humiliation of Halsey, with that famous telegram. Where is task force, whatever? And then the signifier at the end was the world wonders. It didn't actually, the code, it just meant end of coded message. But yeah. Halsey saw that because somebody actually translated and went, you fuckers, because he had been led off on a wild goose chase by a Japanese decoy force while an entire world of shit opened up down around Surigao Straits and Samar and Lady Gulf. And the only thing we had down there was some destroyer escorts, a couple of destroyers, and a couple of those CVEs. And the CVEs got the worst of the aircraft, too. By that time, Corsairs and F-6F Hellcats ruled the skies of the South Pacific, and the poor pilots on the CVEs were still toddling around in F-4F Wildcats that couldn't fly with a zero to save themselves, literally. But all of that comes from the mind of a genius. He'd be a billionaire now, Henry J. Kaiser. And there
were, now, what was he making and doing before he started with the Liberty Show?
He did a little bit of everything. He was an automotive entrepreneur. He introduced the first compact car to America, the Henry J.
Yes, I had a feeling that was the same guy. Didn't he also?
And you know what he was doing the whole time? He was richer than fuck, and he was paying a top marginal tax rate of 91%.
Yeah.
And never bitched about it for a second.
No.
Because you didn't
do that in those days.
Well, not just you didn't do that. He had plenty. And there was no way he could ever not have plenty.
Now, isn't there some connection between the Kaiser organization and the medical thing, Kaiser Permanente? Did he come up with the first HMO?
It may very well have been an outgrowth of one of his philanthropies. I really don't know the answer to that.
No, I believe that back during the healthcare debates, during the Affordable Care Act run-up and working out of that, I believe as background, one of the reporters was talking about the history of healthcare in America, and it seems to me that Henry J. Kaiser not only was a responsible taxpayer and industrialist and patriotic to boot, supporting the war effort in World War II, he also thought highly of his employees because they, after all, provided his fortune. So you want your employees to be healthy and healthcare.
Well, yeah, and some of these concepts go, you know, because and I hesitate to mention Henry Ford because he was such a raging, practically Nazi anti-Semite.
But there is that.
even with his manufacturing process, at one point he said, listen, I'm not going to succeed unless I'm building a car that the people building them can afford to own.
Yeah.
And that's gone. I mean, people who work for Howard Schultz at Starbucks can barely afford a cup of his burnt-up coffee.
God, that's awful coffee. I will go...
Says the guy who drinks it freeze-dried. Now, what kind of damnation is that?
But wait a minute. It used to be just one location in the Normal Heights neighborhood of San Diego. If anybody's ever been here, they know where Normal Heights is. Opened in the early 2000s, Lestat's is a little independent coffee house. And then a few years later, they opened another location in a different neighborhood. And then a few years ago, after that, they opened another one in the Hillcrest area. And I would go a mile and a half out of my way to avoid a Starbucks. Now, I don't know how – there's another chain here called Coffee Bean. I've never tried them, so I don't know if they're as bad or as good as either Lestat's or Starbucks. But I will go out of my way to avoid a Starbucks. And a few years ago, diagonally across from – at this intersection where the original Lestat's is, Starbucks opened a corner coffee place. And I'm looking for it any day now to go under simply because there's no way that they have name recognition, true. They have advertising bucks behind them, true, but they don't have good coffee. And what was wrong with small, medium, and fucking large? Small, medium, and large.
Okay, now hold on, Scott. This is turning into a Seinfeld routine.
Served us perfectly well. Small, medium, and large. What is this Vinny Vici that Howard Schultz came up with?
Oh, it makes it seem like there's something exclusive about it.
Maybe that's why I don't go. I don't know what size to ask for. I might think that I'm getting medium, ordering medium, and the guy backs up the truck and puts the hose out. I don't know. But anyway, I'm getting far afield here, Bob. We both are. But anyway, yes, I can say that Starbucks has rotten coffee, even though I drink Taster's Choice at home. But when I go out, I don't ask for hot water and a spoon to dip my Taster's Choice into the paper cup at the shop. No, I have an actual decent, you know, safe and sane cup of coffee in that environment. It's just at home, I don't brew it. I barely do anything. I mean, how it's a no-brainer to take your spoon and dip out a little bit and put it in hot water. I mean, come on.
Will that be a venti hot water? Oh, and they write your name on your cup. Don't forget that.
Yes.
By the way, Todd says, papers started to reduce in size when USA Today gained ground.
Okay, well, USA Today started in the 80s, right? Like 82?
I
remember.
You are correct. Ron and Raleigh says, you are correct, Scott. Here you go. A link, Kaiser Permanente, About Us, History. And Ron adds, Starbucks is horrible coffee.
There you go. I'm glad that there's agreement.
Yeah, well, it's like, to go back to the Henry Ford reference, you know, back in Henry Ford's day, you could get a Model T in any color you wanted as long as it was black.
Yes.
And at Starbucks, you can get a coffee of any flavor you want as long as it's burnt.
Yes, that's
I mean, that's not to say I've never enjoyed a cup from there. I have. But generally speaking, the people who are actually working in coffee shops that aren't chains care a hell of a lot more. And I like the equal exchange coffee that I can get over at Cathedral Cafe a lot more than the brutality brew that Howard Schultz serves up.
Yeah.
By the way,
well, Lestat's. They are a responsible purveyor of coffees, and they do fair trade, free trade, non-GMO, non-slavery-based, non-whatever.
And, of course, the folks that advertise over on the Malloy program.
I won't say the name.
No, say the name, because I was...
Green Mountain Coffee.
No, it's not Green Mountain.
Blue Mountain.
Blue Tribe.
I knew there was a color.
Yeah, Blue Tribe. They do a great job. Yeah, I won't buy Green Mountain Coffee because A, it's pods, and B, I cannot support ignorance of the sort that they purvey. They ran an ad for a year that included the phrase "coffee beans from Colombia, Brazil, Indonesia, and other parts of South America."
Other parts. When did Indonesia get annexed? Did they move it?
Is there a tunnel? A bridge?
I don't know.
I used to pay attention, and one time I actually wrote that portion of the script down because I'm hopeless that way. And, yeah.
What the hell did I... Oh, I had two... Jesus, this is how far afield we've gotten.
You want a lifesaver?
No. I'll have a Charms Pop, if you please. A grape one.
Mm, secretions.
And I think, didn't they also have sour Charm Pops?
Yes. Those things would turn your mouth inside out, and they were wonderful.
Oh, yes. You'd be puckered for weeks. Days, anyway. Well, let me give my two TV viewing tips, okay?
Oh, we didn't even get to those. Yes, please.
No. Well,
and then I'm going to try to wedge in one more phone call.
the thing that inspired me was the newspapering talk. HBO the other night had a documentary called Breslin and Hamill, Deadline Artists. It's a documentary about Jimmy Breslin
and Pete Hamill.
It was good. If you like the old days of how newspapers used to be.
God, how did they leave Mike Royko out of that?
Well, I don't know. Maybe they wanted to focus on New York, because I immediately thought, but wasn't he out of Chicago?
Yeah, but Jesus.
Yeah, yeah. So Breslin and Hamill, Deadline Artists. And the other was on, and you can stream it on the Independent Lens PBS webpage. It may be on streaming media elsewhere, but that's where I found it. It was on the other night. Let me get up the link here so I can give the proper title. It was on the series Independence Lens on PBS the other night. And the movie is called The King. And it's a Eugene Jarecki film. So you know it's going to have good bona fides. But basically, he rides around, the filmmaker does, in Elvis's 1963 Rolls Royce.
Oh, my God.
And he's got musicians of today's world riding in the back from time to time, stopping in all of these places, recounting the life story of Elvis and his the impact his music had on the country. But it's not just as a travelogue and an interesting thing about music. It tells a deeper story. So if you have Independent Lens, or find that on your TV channels, on your PBS station, or just go to the website and you can watch the documentary there, The King. But one of the things that struck me, climb into Presley's 63 Rolls Royce and discover how Elvis of 1977, bloated, bound up by pills, straining to take a decent dump and dropping dead in the process, is a vivid metaphor for America 2019. That's the main important thing that I took away from the documentary. Just what a foreshadowing Elvis gave us in his final moments of what lie ahead for this once great nation. That's what I picked up from it, in addition to the great music throughout the documentary by contemporary and artists and Elvis himself, and just the notion of riding around the country in a 63 Rolls. I mean, how great would that have been? Owned by Elvis, by the way. Wouldn't you like to do that for about 3 months? Doing the horn from the back seat of a 63 Rolls?
Yeah, but it's the Elvis part of it. I'd be too consumed with wondering what kind of seedy things happened in said back seat.
Well, you've got to elevate your thinking, Bob. I mean, I was never a fan, and this may be, you know, a heresy to some music fans, but I was never a big fan of Elvis. I mean, I realized...
Well, early Elvis is different from back from the Army Elvis.
Yeah. Well, and the documentary goes into that, the change that took place. And Hollywood Elvis was another aspect that I didn't fully realize how damaging that was to him. And there was even a little about Colonel Tom Parker, not his real name, by the way.
No.
And other savory.
Brilliant bio of him out there, by the way.
Really?
From a few years back, yeah.
Do you recall the title? Or
offhand, no.
Those are my two TV viewing tips, and people have come to rely on them and believe them.
Yeah, Agnes is still talking about that one, what was it, Independent Lens piece, Rumble.
Oh, now I hope my niece isn't listening. I sent her the DVD. Her birthday she's up in Montana, and you got to know there's not a lot of joy other than the scenery going on in Red State, Montana. So her birthday is Wednesday, and just yesterday I mailed off the DVD of Rumble, because she's really big into Native American stuff, and I'm sure that she saw it on PBS the other night, but I sent it to her anyway because I figured that she liked it so, or will have liked it so much, she'd want it for her permanent
life. One thing I came away with, apparently touring with Rod Stewart was bad for your health.
Well, there's that.
I mean, we thought it was the Stones, but no, Rod Stewart. Hey, Scott, I'm gonna try to wedge in one more phone call here. So,
we'll wedge it in nice and smooth, Bob.
See, you won't quit. You won't quit.
No, that has nothing to do with anything. I'm just.
I don't have time to lick. I want it quick. Yep.
Well, I do. Take a call, Bob. Take a call. And if Mary in Maryland knows how to reach me, be in touch, because I do good advice.
All right. Later.
Take care.
Bye now. That's our buddy Scott in San Diego. And over to the stress line. Someone's been patiently waiting. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yeah, good evening, Bob. How are you?
Hey, Jim. How are you?
Well, I was just listening to I don't think I've ever heard anything like the last call. I mean, it went straight from
to hell.
Why say to spuckers, and something about somebody cruising around in 62, whatever.
In Elvis's 63 roles, yeah. That's the beauty of a conversation with Scott. It can go anywhere.
Oh, I'll never doubt that again. And, you know, when you tell somebody, hey, I'd like to take another call, I mean, it'd be nice to say, okay, bye.
Well, now let's not critique, but I get that. Hey, you know, I was going to mention something to you. I didn't know this. Maybe you don't. I got an email the other day telling me that Steve, remember Steve?
Yeah.
He passed away.
Well,
not one of our community Steves, but I may have to retire the entire. Yeah.
Well, hey, you know, he can go ruffle newspapers somewhere else. And I hope they don't catch on fire. What can I say? Well, you know, Cheerio is on, Christian is on. That's all I can say. The only reason I call was about Trump's Great Wall. And I was just wanting to make a comment. I mean, does he want it with ziggurats? Or does he want one like, you know, Saddam Hussein was trying to reconstruct, and does he really want an artistic Great Wall? I mean, I realize this is very far.
Well, that's one of the problems. You can't pin him down on the wall that he wants. Does he want Hadrian's Wall with the Roman style castra every thousand stadia or so, or
He wants, and then, you know, that is supposedly encircled Nineveh, in which there were like five chariots could ride abreast around the top of it, if that's the correct place. Instead of that, he could have five motorized vehicles ride around the top of it, and it will be so tall that, you know, sometimes the clouds would even be on the top of it. I mean, his Great Wall. That guy has got to go. I don't know what the hell that the people are doing to try to get rid of his sorry ass, but I wish they would hurry
up. There is progress being made, Jim, because, among other things, Representative John Lewis has scheduled a hearing of Ways and Means in the House, the Oversight Subcommittee.
Didn't they file some type of admonition or some type of...
Yeah, that was the Senate today, and that was over the Syria business. But this is the stuff that'll run his blood pressure through the roof, because the topic of this House Oversight Subcommittee of Ways and Means is legislative proposals and tax law related to presidential and vice presidential tax returns.
Well, you know, there's one thing about the power to tax, and that is the power to destroy. And if they don't want to come forth with their individual tax returns, then they, and they're doing so for reasons that are not legitimate, that they are even undermining their own foundation and are wreaking havoc upon themselves. But the trouble is, as long as they're doing it, they're doing it to the rest of us.
Right. But in the case of Donald Trump's tax returns, remember, if it turns out that it looks like there's some dirty dealings with the Russians, damn thing's subject to a subpoena, too.
I know that. Anyway, that's been going on since 2016. He's always under an audit, and that's such a bunch of bullshit. Because even if you're being under an audit, you can certainly publish, you can do that with your tax returns. And by the way, I'm still here at Morgantown, and guess what? Have had two cases of double pneumonia.
Oh, no, man.
Yeah, one time this nurse went in the bathroom and loaded it with Clorox and left the door open. I tried to call the CA because I felt like I was in a gas.
Jim? Ah, you're still hooked up to the Bluetooth. Well, darn, I hate to hear that Jim has had two bouts of double pneumonia. One bout is no good. I hope you're getting appropriate treatment, Jim. I'm sorry, we've lost your signal. I'm terribly sorry. But I guess that'll bring the program to a close. We're about a minute past the hour, about a minute over. One more time. You there, Jim? No? Okay. Thanks, everybody, for a delightful week of Fundraising Free Radio. Thanks for the kind birthday wishes. Thanks for all you do to keep the program on the air. I mean that from the bottom of my heart. It wouldn't be here without all of you. Thank you so very kindly to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this little ongoing conversation. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks in the chat room this evening to Brother Deacon Asa and pinch-hit midweek utility chat room moderator Steve from Georgistan, all-around great guy. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, for HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. And thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. If you want to, go over there, use the PayPal button at CRMW.net, and kick in a little if you can. And in the memo notation, put Ake Act, and you will be helping to support the work, the desperate work that's going to be taking place here in just a couple of months or so, as we try to get the Ake Act passed through the House of Representatives. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.